Hello, and welcome to this edition of the FAIR Data Podcast, where we discuss all things FAIR, making data findable, accessible, interoperable, and reusable. I'm Rory McNeil, host of the FAIR Data Podcast, and my guest today is Vida Plankite. Vida is Product Manager and Design Lead at ResearchBase. Today we're going to get a debrief from Vida on her takeaways from the recent IDW RDA plenary in Salzburg. Vida, welcome. It's great to have you on the podcast.
Thank you very much for having me.
I don't know about you, but I'm still buzzing from Salzburg. Have you, and I think you might have actually, I understand, caught a bug there. So you could be buzzing for two reasons. Have you recovered both intellectually as well as in terms of health?
Yeah, so there's definitely several aspects of recovery that I can cover here. The physical recovery, yeah, mostly there. It seems like quite a few people caught some kind of bug, which is common after conferences, but it was definitely worth it going to the conference. And in terms of mental recovery, it was interesting because the conference was actually really pleasant. Like Salzburg was quiet and walkable, and the fresh mountain air was just really nice, especially in the mornings. And I thought the way the conference was designed, where you had these fairly lengthy breaks to both network and take a breather, where you didn't really need to choose between the two, was nice. And the variety in the days, with sometimes having plenaries and not, meant that the conference didn't really feel as overwhelming as I maybe thought it would initially. I definitely have a lot of thoughts brewing, though, and I'm almost like no sense of direction of how to start approaching all the really interesting things people told me about. So there's definitely still some recovery going on. But what about yourself?
Yes, well, happily, I guess, touch wood, I was lucky I didn't catch the bug, so so I didn't have to recover from the flu. But I think I share your feelings about all the. It was a great conference, and Salzburg was an amazing venue, and the conference itself was. I think the organization was very thoughtful, as you said, and I am still buzzing in terms of trying to process all the information and conversations I had. So absolutely, and I expect that'll continue to play out. So all good. Well, let's start with a high-level view. If you had to choose, and I realize this would be difficult, but if you had to choose just three main takeaways from the conference, what would they be?
Yeah, three main takeaways. It was interesting to see the focus of the different talks. Obviously, there were a lot of sessions, so I didn't attend all of them, nor would I say I had like a very holistic understanding of all the content that was delivered. But the sessions I did go to, there were quite a few where there was a focus on the design and the thought work with regards to research data management and tooling and the research commons, and a lot of conversation around conceptual and infrastructure level approaches. And what was interesting is that there was a common thread in the questions, I think, afterwards, after the talks, where it seems like people are ready for the next step of, okay, this seems like a good framework. How does this look when implemented? Do you have an example use case? And what problems occur in like executing the model in a specific context in that step of the process? Because that's really the only way to validate a model and to see its issues. And as a designer, that is very much part of the design workflow, to have these kind of prototypes and to test them and validate. So that resonated with me. The other two themes, I think, probably the push and pull between generalizability and specificity in how things are implemented and how to fit various domains that might have completely different needs and how to navigate that. Obviously, there's no solution to this kind of problem that's just perfect. But I thought it was interesting to see how certain talks handled this through collaborations as well. And I think this reflects a little bit our IGSN project report, where we discussed the idea of clear responsibilities and integrating the Well, I think the core idea there was that when we talk with friends of our space and new people at the conference, a lot of the conversations were around, well, you know, there's no need for us to both build the same thing. We can just integrate rather than doing the work twice. And so it was quite exciting to see how things get really joined together, especially when the talks were covering practical examples of, let's say, research commons in integrations and how they were able to put several tools together to manage that, providing enough capabilities without having too much either. So I think those would be my free takeaways.
Yeah, very interesting. Yeah, good. So that's kind of a general view. If we drill down a bit, I know you've been doing a lot of work with PIDs recently. There was no shortage of discussion about PIDs in Salzburg. If there was a, what are they called, this word map, I would bet that PIDs was at the top of the most commonly spoken about, both in the sessions and outside the sessions. So there's a lot of talk about PIDs. So what were some of the main themes relating to PIDs that caught your eye?
So related to PIDs, I think the domain-specific talks were really valuable and interesting to me because they drilled down to the practical examples of what are the issues that a specific field or a specific institution seems to face when implementing PIDs. And that really caught my eye in some of the really understandable examples that you can give to someone. For example, one of the talks was about all the different words that can be used in categorizing microplastics and how different countries or different experience levels will use different words for this, and that there is no kind of standardized metadata for that. Or in chemistry, the more philosophical even conversation of when is a sample a different sample? If a reaction reaches a certain high point, then should that be recorded as a separate PID? If different elements are combined, should that be a separate PID? Should it be linked? Should it be a container PID? And I think that can only really be resolved probably through communities of practice having these conversations. But the core takeaway from that theme is that it's often not a technical issue that we're dealing with. That it's often about thinking at the step before in the terms of metadata standardization and the negotiation of that, and also what and should have a PID and how to use that PID as well, and also the advent of different PIDs that are trying to satisfy a need such as RAID for project PIDs, as well as metadata for data such as, I remember a couple of talks, I think the Fair Objects talk as well, about the idea that if you're reusing a data set, being able to have the context of how it was used rather than just having the raw data so you can contextualize it. And I think process and adoption and onboarding being a core issue was also not surprising, but really validating to hear about that, that a lot of questions were about how do you get the researchers to actually use this, and conversations around data curation and stewardship, that being, again, an issue that comes before any technical implementation. And so as a designer, again, that it made me happy that those topics were brought up and at the forefront of the conversation.
Yeah. And as I was just listening to you speak, another thing that I noticed about PIDs, an interesting topic that came up was I forget which the session was, but the question was asked by a practitioner, i.e. Someone who's managing PIDs at their institution. And they said, well, if the example given was if I think it's a DOI had been registered and there was some need for whatever reason to correct the DOI because a mistake had been made, they would try to do that, and the answer came back: "You're not the owner of this piece of data, therefore we can't discuss it with you." But in fact, the data in that case, the PID manager was the appropriate person who's been designated by their institution to do that. So I think that to me, that brought, it's those kind of theory versus practice, practical issues, which there's a lot to be worked out as well. And so there's that aspect. You mentioned the chemistry. When does one sample become another sample? That's an open question. Well, I think there are a lot of open questions in the practical implementation, which frankly, many of which arose because the kind of proper design process that you were mentioning earlier didn't really exist for the earlier PIDs. They were just, I don't really know that much about the history, but they were kind of, somebody arose and now they're being introduced, or they have been introduced, and yet the practicalities of this very complex ecosystem that they need to be delivered and practiced in is in some cases almost overwhelmingly complex compared to the relatively simple theoretical model on which the delivery is based. And so there's a lot of issues to be worked out there, I think, as well.
Yeah, for sure. And the design process is not like a fail-safe method. It's mostly it's a form of risk management, really, and trying to have some structure in your approach and trying to iterate and make sure that you're checking with people to make sure there's no misunderstandings, you're covering their use cases and their workflows and all of that. And it's definitely a really useful process, but it's also completely valid that at the time there was a need that needed to be met and it was just created out of that. But then as PIDs became more adopted and the need for them became really apparent, a lot of use cases start emerging where the initial implementation or just the amount of options becomes not suited and needs to be somehow expanded. So it seems like a natural process that we start now to approach it from a different perspective of, okay, well, let's take a step back and try to make sense of all of this.
Yeah, and it's really, I thought it was really encouraging that RAID, which is, I guess, one of the newest PIDs, which is still, it's close to being finalized, but it sounded like they took a much more, you know, kind of traditional design-led requirements gathering type approach and trying to engage with various players in the ecosystem. And so that was encouraging, that it does seem as if the maturity of the PID development is moving forward, which is nice. So from discussions we've had, I take it that another area that came up a lot for you was data stewardship and data curation. Is that right?
Yes, I made some friends in the data stewardship and curation space. And I think the reason why we bonded was that as a designer, as I mentioned, I often know that issues can stem from social or process problems, which need to be designed and redesigned and can't be directly fixed by technology. So looking deeper and earlier into where a problem stems is kind of part of the design practice. And I enjoy things being very organized and advocacy as well. So there's definitely that as a common thread as well. There was some really interesting conversations about me, especially coming to the conference as a newbie and not necessarily knowing all of the lingo, realizing that there is a lack of clarity on what various roles even do. So there were a couple conversations around what is exactly the difference between, let's say, data stewardship or data curation or a data librarian or a research data management officer. And it seems that there is no consensus, and depending on the maturity of the institution or their geographical location, they use different language. And other institutions that maybe just start off implementing a PIDs process and the advocacy around that might just take a word that seems fitting and describe a job role that actually maybe encompasses a few skills. And I think in order to satisfy the needs, let's say in integrator tools or in PIDs of these different people, we need to clearly identify the different roles and what they perform. Because if we lump everything under just, oh, it's data curation, that it's not even clear. Is this, you know, the advocacy part? Is it the advice part? Is it the after something has been submitted and needs to be reviewed to be inserted in a central repository? Do these people touch the data and interact with the data, or do they let the researchers do it? So that was really interesting, I think, and really, again, signifies there's a lot more work to do than initially predicted.
Yeah, those are really interesting issues, I find, as well. But it's great that you got a chance to talk with people who are actually in those roles. So in terms of direct relevance to your own work, what were the most useful themes or relevant themes you noticed or things that you learned?
I think rather than something very specific, I think just experiencing RDA and seeing what the general conversations are around, how people discuss things, what their the general consensus is, was really interesting. And there was a lot of small pieces of knowledge where, say, a concept or an organization or a tool or an approach that, because I'm not part of the space of RDM in terms of being from a research background or being part of an institution, for me, it might be new, while for others, it might come as a given. So I think, again, with conferences, it's often the case that you gain a lot of this contextual knowledge, which I find really useful. And the in-person conversations were definitely really useful for that as well. And it was good to see that people do want to engage and find solutions, because often in the day-to-day work, when we're focused on, let's say, fixing bugs or trying to figure out which feature to prioritize, knowing that if one gets prioritized, then someone else will not be as happy and all of that, that it's all about trying to satisfy a gap rather than feeling like you're really having agency in directing some change. And I think the conversations at the RTA were really useful to take a step back and see how some of the features we're building are actually part of a bigger context, which in terms of how exactly our space might work and what kind of role it might play in research data management.
Okay, really interesting. So this is your first RDA plenary. I think it's pretty clear from your, you know, from your observation so far that you generally had a positive experience. Well, was it different from what you expected, or did you have any prior expectations?
I did have some expectations. I don't really know where they come from, but I thought it'd be kind of a very businessy, serious conference. Like, people would be in suits and speaking in words I don't quite understand, and that I'd feel a little bit lost. But actually, everyone was just really friendly. And I was a bit surprised that I thought there would be a lot of researchers at the conference, but it was a lot of research data management people and infrastructure. Again, I don't really know the right technical term to group all of those people together, but I feel like the stakeholder representation of the actual people, let's say, doing day-to-day work in the lab didn't feel as large as I would have expected. And I wonder if that's just the type of conference. But I think it reflects also maybe the need to maybe have more of those voices because of the whole domain specificity and practical implementation of tools. And everyone was in a good mood and chatty and very passionate, and I definitely enjoyed that as well. And I thought the choice of city was really nice as well, because even though we were really busy, there was still a space to breathe and to take space to take it easier if you wanted to, without feeling like you're missing out too much. So I was quite impressed by that in terms of how the whole conference was organized, and yeah, definitely looking forward to any future event.
Yeah, excellent, good. So you were certainly very actively involved in the plenary in a whole variety of ways as a presenter. I know you were pretty active doing questions after other presentations. And then you also, one of the key activities is meeting and engaging with people in the main hall and in the social occasions. And you did all of that. So you certainly took full part. it's probably hard to choose, but which of the various things that you did you find most rewarding?
Most rewarding, I think the diversity of activities that we could do was really useful in feeling like you could switch your brain between different modes and giving your brain a bit of rest in one kind of maybe very intense thinking mode to more of a connecting thoughts mode. So I think all of the activities were rewarding in their own right. I think the main hall conversations were really, really fun because you'd get people talking really fast and sharing ideas because they felt like they were really connecting and discussing talks or just discussing something after meeting for the first time in real life in a few years. And I thought that was really fun, and there was definitely an energy there. And obviously the bar crawls and just the social time I always really enjoyed that because you get to just speak about various topics that emerge that might not have emerged directly during the day, but that are actually sometimes very relevant and very interesting. So yeah, those would be my favorite. What about yourself?
Huh. Yeah. Well, I enjoyed it all. I think you're right, though. I mean, the presentations, it's always fun to make a presentation because you have to put a bit of discipline into it and then to see whether there's any reactions, or both positive and negative reactions are all good as long as there's some reaction. And I was involved in, in a working group. So that's very intense because you're actually trying to do something. So as well as presentations. But I would say the discussions I think the main hall is interesting because that's, as you say, where some of the more, where people try to synthesize what they're thinking about. And then that's where a lot of creativity takes place. And it's also open. You're not kind of bound by a particular session. And people try to also aggregate what they learned, I guess, or what they're thinking about through the various sessions. So I noticed some people just more or less just hang out in the main hall. They don't even go to the presentations very much. And I can kind of see why they do that. But I think I found also, as you said, it was the intersection between the different modes of being in a presentation, kind of intensely focusing or either presenting or listening to about a particular topic. And then when you're in the main hall, you might run into someone that you're planning to meet, or it could just be some random discussion that you get pulled into. And then it's really the combination of those two things, which probably is the most stimulating for me, I would say. So something else, which I understand you were part of, which was, I think, probably totally unexpected, and it didn't happen to me, but it must have been quite interesting. I understand you are part of a new group formed by early stage, I don't want to call them researchers, but early stage attendees of RDA, let's call them. So tell us about that. That's quite interesting.
Yes. So there was intensive discussion and conversation during one of the bar crawls to figure out what the best name would be. And after a few severely failed attempts, we settled on echoes. So it sounds like echoes, right? The idea of, bouncing things around, being from different parts and then having moments of kind of interaction. At least that's how I envision it. And it stands for early career open science enthusiasts. And we chose the word enthusiasts to be inclusive of non-researchers such as myself, as well as, let's say, data steward people as well. And it emerged as a social group, really, that could eventually evolve into more of like an advocacy platform, mostly to try to get these larger events to cater a little bit and have content relevant for early career researchers and open science enthusiasts, so that it would be easier to enter that space. And since that's definitely very, very, very important to get people into the pipeline, to then having those contacts and furthering their interests. And one of our members, Cyrus Walter, actually got elected to be part of the committee for CoData. So, and he'll try to get on the program committee for RTA Brisbane. So definitely get in touch with me if you want to learn more, and because it seems like a really fun space that we're creating, and we'll make sure to hang out at any further conferences together.
Yeah, that's fantastic. No, I was so pleased to see that happen, and I mean the kind of people that were involved in and Echoes have a lot to contribute to the discussion that probably people who have been involved for a long time, you know, sometimes they have a lot to contribute, of course, because of their breadth of their experience, but sometimes you need new thinking and new ideas, and you can only get that through new people who are coming in. So that was really, really fantastic. Great. Well, this is great, Vida. I mean, I think this has been a nice reminder of something which only took place, I guess, not that long ago, 10 days ago. Happy memories, and also beginning to stimulate some thoughts about the various substantive things that you've mentioned. So, thank you very much. That's been great.
Yeah, thank you too for the chat, and I'll make sure to get back to booking some follow-up calls with people, because there's a lot of interesting conversations to follow up on for sure.
Absolutely. Okay, that's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed the discussion. The Fair Data Podcast is provided by fairdatapodcast.org and produced by Meroz Ahmed. You can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Podcasts, and follow us on Twitter @FairDataPodcast. See you next time.